Welcome to Measuring Success Right, the official podcast of the Marriott Student Review, a podcast for students by students, where we connect the leaders of tomorrow with the issues of today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this week's episode of Measuring Success Right. I'm your host, Tim Kelleher. Today's guest will be Professor Tyler Shumway. Professor Shumway graduated from Brigham Young University in 1991 with a degree in economics. He continued his education at the University of Chicago and finished his business PhD in 1996. Following his PhD, Professor Shumway began teaching finance at the University of Michigan Ross School of Business. He taught at Michigan for 25 years before coming to BYU in June of 2020. Professor Shumway has published award-winning research articles in several finance journals. He has served as a finance area editor at Management Science, and he was the dissertation advisor for many PhD students at Michigan. Professor Shumway also enjoys outdoor activities, including ice climbing. Professor Shumway, thank you for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So to start off, would you give us a little bit of background about what class you're teaching this semester and what that class entails?
Sure. So this semester I am teaching a class. It is called Finance 411. It is about options and futures and swaps, which are kind of super nerdy financial contracts. It's all about how people trade these things, how they value them, what they use them for. It's super fun class. It's a little bit mathy, but very valuable stuff in the real world. So it's mostly for finance majors, but super fun class to teach.
I also want to get into a little bit of your background because you've attended and worked at various universities. After graduating from BYU, you then went to the University of Chicago. Can you give us a bit of background of why you chose the University of Chicago?
So when I was an undergraduate at BYU studying economics, I got to know some of the econ professors. I worked for one of them as a research assistant, and I took kind of the advanced econ classes. I was enjoying the classes a lot, so I took the advanced classes. And I was trying to decide whether I should go on to law school or get a job and work for a few years and then get an MBA. And I started looking into the GMAT exam, which is the exam you have to take in order to go to graduate business programs. And I got a brochure about the GMAT exam, and it had an advertisement in the middle of it that said, you should think about getting a PhD in business. And it said, I don't know if it was true or not, but it said, there is a big shortage of business professors, and in the next 20 years or whatever, we're going to need a lot of business professors. So I had thought about getting a PhD in economics, but I had never considered the possibility of getting a PhD in business. So I went to talk to some of my econ professors, and they said, oh, yeah, business PhD is not a terrible way to go. You could study all kinds of things in business, including business economics or finance or something related. So after that, I decided to try to get a PhD in business. I was a little bit put off by the work requirement for MBA programs, to be completely honest. And I was enjoying econ so much, I wanted to go kind of straight to graduate school. So I took the GMAT exam and applied to several different programs, and I got into four or five different programs, including the University of Chicago. And I decided to go to Chicago on the advice of my econ professors here at BYU, and it was a great place to go. Super fun.
What was your favorite part about the University of Chicago?
So University of Chicago is a place, at least in business and economics and finance, where they take the research that the faculty do there super, super seriously. So while I was at Chicago, I was in a class, taking an econ class, because you take a lot of econ classes to get a finance, effectively, PhD. I was in an econ class with a professor named Gary Becker, and after about a month of having class with Professor Becker, it was announced all over the news that he had won the Nobel Prize in Economics. So Gary Becker came to our very next, you know, class meeting, and we all stood up and clapped for him, and he said, yeah, yeah, thanks, whatever. And went right to the board and started writing down equations and, you know, continued with class as if almost nothing had happened, which was amazing.
Wow.
But while I was there, another two or three people that I kind of worked with and knew won the Nobel Prize, and about 10 years after I left, my dissertation advisor won the Nobel Prize. So it's a place where people take that kind of scholarship very, very seriously, or at least they were taking it very seriously when I was there as a student. So it's very fun to get to know people like that.
Yeah, it was an environment of learning, not only for the students, but also for
It was an environment of learning. They had, so it's amazing that people were winning Nobel Prizes at the time I was there. Another just kind of anecdote about the University of Chicago is they would post all over the school every week a page-long list of all of the research seminars that were going on during that week. And there were research, there were like 20 different research seminars on all different kinds of topics. And this is a seminar is when somebody comes, usually from another school, and they present their cutting edge research to the faculty. And the faculty, you know, there's a lot of back and forth. They ask questions, they offer criticisms. And so these things were super interesting to attend. They always had tons of seminars going on, lots of people attending. Big disagreements on some of those seminars, which was very interesting. And you could really see kind of these people hashing out, trying to get to the truth, at least of the question that they were addressing in each research seminar. It made it very interesting and fun to be there. So,
now, after you finished your PhD, you're ending your time there at the University of Chicago. How did you decide what was your next step? Did you know that teaching or being a professor would be your next step? Or were there other things you were also thinking about?
I pretty much wanted to be a professor when I started graduate school. The graduate school programs, PhDs in finance in particular, they screen people pretty heavily on, they want to bring in PhD students that are going to try to get academic jobs. They don't really want to train PhD students to go to Wall Street jobs because they want to train MBA students to go to Wall Street jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And a difference is, you know, they charge MBA students lots of tuition. And they give PhD students, because PhD students are relatively poor, they give them kind of financial breaks. They even give them kind of a stipend to live off of. So they screen pretty heavily for people that want to become professors. And I thought, I had seen the lifestyle of my econ professors. I respected those guys a lot. And I wanted to do something like that because it seemed great. So I kind of wanted an academic job from when I started. Coming out of Chicago, you go on the academic job market, meaning you send your dissertation paper basically to lots of different schools, and you wait to see who interviews you. And I succeeded in getting a job in the academic job market, which is great.
Yeah.
So I have been a professor for a long, long time. So.
Yeah, so you ended up at the University of Michigan. And can you give us a bit of background on that process? Not only how did you actually end up there, but the decision to go there, how they found you, the interview, all of that?
Sure. So the academic job market, it's this whole kind of complicated process. You send your dissertation out by Thanksgiving of the year before you want to start a teaching job in the summer. Does that make sense? So
yeah.
By like the end of September, or sorry, the end of November, you kind of have to have your dissertation in pretty good shape. So I sent my dissertation to 30 or 40 schools, and I wound up with something like 20 interviews at our professional meetings, which always happened in the first weekend of January. I don't even remember what city it was in that I was interviewing. But so you kind of go around from hotel room to hotel room, and you're talking to people from all these different schools. So some schools were, I talked to some grade schools and some kind of middle schools and some not so good schools. And it was very interesting. You meet a bunch of people. These are like half an hour interviews. You tell them very quickly what your research is about. And then the schools that like you, they invite you out to give a research presentation, to do, they call it a job talk, and also to meet with everybody on their faculty. So I went to several different schools, including Michigan, and Michigan made me a job offer, and I agreed to move there by something like the end of February, and then I actually moved my family there the following July. So it was close to... You know, my wife at first was a little bit nervous about moving to Michigan. she was kind of happy to move to Chicago to begin our PhD program, but after living there for 4 years, she was ready to move. So Michigan is close to Chicago. I mean, it's like a 4-hour drive or something. So we actually got in the car and we drove from Chicago over to Ann Arbor so she could check it out, get a feel of the town. And then she said, okay, we can move there. So then we moved there. So.
Yeah, so at that point, you not only were married, did you already have kids at that point too?
So we had, when we entered Chicago, we were coming straight out of BYU and we already had one daughter. And by the time we left Chicago, we had had our third child. So we had two kids in Chicago and then we had three more kids in Michigan. But yeah, so we were a small family at that point, so.
With your family and all your responsibilities there, how did you exactly decide that Michigan was the place, other than your wife, of course, visiting there? Were there other steps that you took, or maybe other answers you received in regards to Michigan specifically being the right place for you?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, you get job offers and you have to compare and contrast them. And I think I had to compare Michigan to maybe three or four other places. It was of the places where I got offers, I think it was kind of the best academically. It paid about the same as most of the places. There's a pretty uniform wage for finance professors. It probably helped that it was close, and Ann Arbor actually turned out to be a great place to live. So we decided to go to Michigan, yeah. We prayed about it and felt good about it, but also just kind of objectively, it looked like a reasonable
It looked
decision.
Like the best option for you guys.
Yeah, so I mean, so for example, we had an offer also from Indiana University, and Indiana's great, but Ann Arbor, a great thing about Ann Arbor, this is kind of a silly thing, but it is like half an hour away from the Detroit airport, which is like a major hub, and you can get from there anywhere very quickly. And Indiana is like an hour and a half from Indianapolis, which is not nearly as much of a hub. So anyway, so.
Yeah, location
so
too.
Ann Arbor was a great location. It was a great place to raise kids. So yeah. I lived there for 25 years. So.
I assume that you really enjoyed it there. You lived there for 25 years. What were some of the highlights of living in Ann Arbor?
In Ann Arbor. So Ann Arbor has got to be one of the kind of best college towns in the country. It is, like I said, close to the Detroit airport. It is also close to Detroit. There's not that much going on in Detroit that you necessarily want to participate in. Some things are cool about Detroit, or the Detroit metro area in general. But Ann Arbor has good restaurants, smart people, good schools for your kids. But at the same time, it's not like housing is not insanely expensive there. There's a stake centered in Ann Arbor, so the church is fine there. There's a temple in Detroit. There wasn't a temple in Detroit when we moved there. When we first moved there, we had to go back to Chicago or over to Toronto, which were about the same distance away. But after a while, they built a temple in Detroit, so it was a nice place to live.
Yeah. Once you've gotten to Michigan, you start teaching and you start researching there. For you, was teaching something that came naturally, or was that something you had to learn as you spent more years at Michigan?
Teaching is a thing mostly that we learn by doing. In PhDs, at least at a place like Chicago, PhD is really a research degree. They're teaching you how to do research, and research is a critical thing that we have to be able to do. And so you come out of a place like Chicago with an ability to research, but not necessarily a great ability to teach. So the first few years that I taught at Michigan, I did not do a particularly great job, but I improved and I learned. And teaching is a thing that you can get better at by practicing. And I think slowly over time, I got better at it, learned how to incorporate real world news and talk about things that are interesting to students and things over time. So.
Yeah, were there techniques or plans you used to get better? Was there a process you used at all?
That's a good question. There are lots of processes. I mean, you talk to students, you talk to your peers, you kind of just see how it's going. You see where students are confused and where they understand things, and you decide how hard you want to push. Most PhD students who are teaching for the first time are kind of too theoretical. So you have to kind of mix the theory that you learned in your PhD program with practical applications or examples. And it takes a while to kind of learn how to do that. But it is something that you can get better at over time. And so I think most of us get better over time in the teaching professions.
And how was research at Michigan? What did you enjoy about your research there?
So what you hope for in a researching job is good peers to talk to, good colleagues to work with, good people that you can make friends with. And Michigan was, while I was there, it was a pretty collegial place. There were good people to work with. I started papers with PhD students there, started papers with colleagues. I had a colleague named Josh that we wrote two or three papers together. Josh eventually moved to Harvard. So he was a smart guy doing great research. And it was good to be in a place where there were smart people that had a good motivation to do research, that were talking about research kind of all the time.
After spending 25 years in Michigan, you made this big move to BYU. Can you explain a little bit of the reasoning behind that and how it came about?
Yeah, so there are lots of reasons that we moved to BYU. A big reason is my wife and I were both students at BYU ages ago, and we liked BYU. We really enjoyed our BYU experience. After being in Michigan for 25 years, we really liked the place, but we also felt kind of like we'd done everything that we wanted to do there, and we were feeling like it was a good time to move. A number of our kids were coming out to BYU or BYU-Idaho and moving west, and we've always liked the West, so we thought about going on the job market generally and trying to get another professor job just someplace besides Michigan. But when we thought about it, we said, maybe we should go to BYU because we like BYU, and we talked to the department here, and they were agreeable to potentially hiring us, so we decided to move to BYU. We came here before moving here permanently. We came here 5 or 6 years ago on a one-year sabbatical visit. So we came and we really liked our ward and our neighborhood over by the stadium. And we liked teaching at BYU. We liked living in Provo. So then we said, maybe we should move here permanently. And we decided eventually to do it. So
that was kind of the seed that planted it in your mind.
Well, I mean, I was friends with people in the department forever, and I've always liked BYU. So that was kind of, that was more than a seed, I would say. It was maybe kind of like a test run or something like that.
Yeah.
How it is to actually be here and teach and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, so I believe in BYU's mission, and I like the students at BYU in general. I like the church connection of BYU or the church sponsorship of BYU and the feeling that you're contributing to something bigger than just sending kids to Wall Street jobs or something like that. And so it was a natural place to come after being at Michigan for a long time. So.
And now you've been at BYU for 2 years. You came here in June of 2020. How have you liked it here at BYU so far?
It has been great. It's been a lot of fun. My family has enjoyed moving to Provo. And like I said, I like the students here. The finance group is a very collegial group, and people there are pretty serious about research and interested in this kind of stuff. So it's like I said before, it's nice to be part of BYU's mission, which is bigger than just sending people out for jobs. And so it has been a good move. So we've been happy.
And I want to ask you a little bit about the University of Michigan compared to BYU. In what ways do you feel that they're similar to each other? And then what ways do you feel that they're different?
So BYU and Michigan, they're both very large schools. Michigan is owned by the state of Michigan. It's a state school, of course. And BYU is private, so that's a bit of a difference. But they're both really large schools with good business schools that have both undergraduates and MBAs. A difference is Michigan has a PhD program in finance, also a big PhD program in economics, and we don't have either of those here. Another big difference is the church sponsorship of BYU, where Michigan is owned by the state. So they kind of have different objectives. In terms of like students, people ask me all the time, how are BYU students compared to Michigan students? So Michigan students are pretty smart students on average. They are academically doing quite well. But Michigan is the kind of place where people apply to University of Michigan as well as 10 other schools, and they'll have a ranking of the schools. And if they got into Michigan but not the next best school on their list, then they will come to Michigan, if that makes sense. So you get at a place like Michigan a pretty high level of talent, but it's also a relatively narrow band of talent, at least ex ante talent, that is revealed by college applications, if that makes sense. You don't have too many students applying who are like, I'm going to go to Michigan no matter what. I could go to Harvard, but instead I'm going to decide to go to Michigan just because I love Ann Arbor or something like that. Most people, if they get into Harvard or Michigan, they will go to Harvard instead. Whereas BYU has people that come here because BYU is special and different. So you have a nice kind of upper tail of students at BYU, is the way we would describe it. So you have some very smart students at BYU who don't even apply to Harvard because they just want to come to BYU. So they're very academically gifted, talented people that come here, and it's kind of fun to get to know some of those people. So the students, there's more of an upper tail at BYU than there is at Michigan. Maybe on average, the Michigan students have a little bit higher test scores than BYU students and things, but they are relatively comparable in that sense. So
how do you keep teaching fresh after doing it for over 25 years? And not only teaching, but also research.
So the fun thing about teaching at a university level is you are really teaching, we all should be teaching kind of cutting edge stuff. And a nice thing about finance is that finance is kind of changing all the time. So there's new stuff to learn, new stuff going on, new data to observe, new questions to ask. When I started teaching finance, there was no such thing as cryptocurrency. There were no meme stocks. I started teaching finance before Enron and long-term capital management, which are ancient things that most of your listeners probably will not understand those references. But I mean, there's news every day in finance. I mean, the stock market goes up or down every single day, and we always have new data, new interesting things going on. It is a fun world to work in, if that makes sense. And a nice thing about being a university teacher is, I mean, what in most universities, including BYU and Michigan for sure, there is a complementarity between the research that we do and our teaching. So we go to, here at BYU, we also have research seminars. We just had today a guy come from MIT and present his research. So we go to that and we learn. And we learn new things, and sometimes we share them with our students. So to keep it fresh, you have to keep it cutting edge. To keep it cutting edge, you should be learning new stuff all the time. A really fun thing about the job is that you get to keep learning. So, you know, we know a lot of people that are in college. We feel, or at least I've always felt like I came to college and I kind of got trapped. I never escaped college. So in some ways, maybe I never grew up because I'm like a college student forever. But the fun thing about it is, in college, you're learning new stuff all the time. And like ever since college, I've been able to continue learning new stuff kind of all the time. People can do that in other professions. I'm not saying that being a college professor is the only place where you can do that. But it is part of your job as a college professor to continue learning and part of the research process. So that complementarity between research and teaching really helps you keep it fresh and fun, if that makes sense.
We've talked a lot about your professional experience. I want to transition a little bit away from that and into some of your personal experience. How do you personally balance your work and research responsibilities with your family and religious responsibilities?
Yeah, that is a good question. For me, I think my family and church responsibilities have usually been a higher priority for me than my work responsibilities. I don't want to neglect my work and things, but if my family needs me, then a nice thing about being a professor is it is a relatively flexible job. It is not like, other than when you're teaching, you know, if you're doing research in your office and you need to go attend to some family emergency, you can. And so it has been good for spending time with the family. It's good for being able to do church things. To have kind of a flexible schedule. But you got to have priorities in life, and my family is a higher priority than I love what I do and I enjoy being a professor, but my main priority, my measure of success is, can I feed my kids and keep a roof over my head? And is their life reasonably comfortable? And as long as that is kind of met, if I can enjoy my work as well or have some success at it, then that is additional kind of a positive bonus. But the base criteria is my family okay? And I've been able to prioritize them and they've been okay. So
they've been good. So you talk about setting priorities, and I feel like many college students are struggling with that or kind of figuring their way through that. What advice would you give to people who are currently trying to figure out what their priorities are or should be?
Yeah, so that is a good question. I think your family and relationships are your highest priority. After that, a very close priority is to continue learning and improving yourself and improving what, as economists, we call your human capital, which is kind of your total value as a person. You should improve your human capital on social and spiritual dimensions as much as on educational dimensions or secular dimensions. But you got to put a pretty high priority on school. We see a fair number of students these days that are working two full-time jobs and trying to take 15 hours of credits at the same time, and that always strikes us as kind of crazy. You got to put a pretty high priority on school because school is going to impact kind of the rest of your life. So your family should be your highest priority. Church obligations also up there with your family. But then right after that, I think probably your schoolwork should be a very high priority as well. You have 30 or 40 years to earn money. When you're in school, should not be focused so much on earning money. Borrow money if you have to. You should be focused on learning as much as you can from your school and launching yourself as well as you can in the job market.
Yeah, making the most out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there, along with that, is there any other advice you would give to students just now graduating college?
Just now graduating college, this is an interesting place to be in because of the economy. I would lock down a job as soon as you can right now, given what is going on, you know, given that people are forecasting that we could have a recession very soon. But the job market seems very, very tight. It seems like there are lots of jobs right now, but 6 months from now, there may not be. So if you have a job offer and you're waffling on whether you should take it or move on to the next one, it's probably a good idea to take job offers right now and hope that they are still there in 6 months or something. Other than that, it is hard to know. People graduating are going to be thinking about buying houses and things like that. All of those markets are interesting and strange and in flux right now. So it is a kind of a complicated time to be graduating. But yeah, I would say get a job as soon as you can. Hold on to that job and use your, most students at BYU are members of the church, use your church connections to help you get a job if you don't have one right now, to help you when you move. One thing that has been great, you know, throughout my life, you move into a new town like Chicago or Ann Arbor, wherever you're moving to, and because, you know, I am a member of the church, I automatically, immediately have lots of friends in a new ward. And that has been a great thing. I've had friends in the profession that are not members of the church, and they move to a new place, and they're like, I have no friends here. And it takes them like a year and a half to kind of meet anybody because they're working and they're super busy. So it is super beneficial to be an active member of the church when you go out and take your first job, and your ward is a great resource. So.
Well, thank you very much for being with us here today. We have one final question for you, and that is, in your life, how do you measure success?
So as I said a few minutes ago, my first priority is always my family. So if my family is, if I am kind of providing for my family, then I consider that to be a success. Above and beyond providing for your family, I really enjoy the aspect of professor life that you can continue to learn and develop. So that, if you're continually learning, continually growing, I think that is a dimension of success as well. And spiritually and socially, if you are kind of happy, I think that that is a dimension of success as well. If you feel comfortable with whatever obligations you have taken on and you are fulfilling them, that is a measure of success as well. So that is, I think, how I would measure success. First, family. Next, are you continually learning and improving? And then finally, are you comfortable socially, spiritually, and making progress there as well?
Great. Thank you, Professor Shumway, for being with us here today.
Thank you very much.
And thank you all for listening this week. Please feel free to check out our other podcast episodes, and we'll see you next week.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud so you never miss an episode. Be a friend and tell a friend about Measuring Success Right.
This podcast is a project of the Marriott Student Review at Brigham Young University. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Marriott Student Review or online at marriottstudentreview.org.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect official policy or position of Brigham Young University or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.